Morning, we continue our series on Windows of the Soul. And I would like to talk to you about the forgiveness response in accordance with the text in Matthew 18, 35th verse. Forgive your brother from your heart. Simon Wiesenthal was a Jew who survived the concentration camp. He lost 89 of his family and relatives to the atrocities and the brutality of the Nazis. And he's known today as a crusader who tirelessly pursues those who killed so many of his people 50 years ago. To explain why he could not get over this, he wrote a book entitled Sunflower. In the first part of the book, he tells about his experience in a concentration camp in Poland. He was out in the back of a hospital cleaning up some garbage when a nurse came and asked him to follow her into the hospital. He came to the bed of a young officer of the Nazis, obviously dying, head bandaged, with gauze oozing with pus, unable to see anything but two eyes and a mouth. And the nurse introduced him and the Secret Service agent took his hand firmly as the nurse left and looked into the eyes of the Jewish slave and said, "I needed to see you. You see, some years ago, I helped herd your people into an old barn and then ignite it. And I stood outside with a machine gun. And if any tried to escape, we gunned them down. Before I die and before I can die in peace, I need your forgiveness. Will you forgive me?" There was a long pause, and then Simon ripped his hand loose and turned about and left the Secret Service agent to die in his misery and guilt. Simon goes on to tell how he wrote 32 philosophers, theologians, rabbis, ethicists, asking, "Did I do right?" 26 of them said, "He did." 6 of them said, "You should have forgiven him." What would you have said? What would Jesus have said? Not quite as dramatic a scene, but a question somewhat similar came to Jesus from Peter, who asked him, "How many times should we forgive, Lord? Not just the 3 times according to rabbinic law, but how about 7? And then the 8th time we have a right to be angry and revenge the wrong." Jesus said, "No, you forgive 70 times 7. That is, you forgive from the heart as often as anyone asks. This is not an easy command of Jesus. But he goes on to explain it with a story. He said once there was a king, and the king called his servants to give an accounting of their indebtedness to him. One servant in particular came to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now that's about 12 times the gross national product of that entire nation at the time. So you could see, how could he ever pay such a debt? But, as the king said, because of this debt I'm going to sell you and your family in payment, the man fell on his knees and said, "Please, Your Majesty, have patience, and I'll pay everything back." And the king, seeing his servant so humbled and apologetic, that his heart melted, and he said, "Forget it. I forgive you the whole debt. You're free to go." And you can see the man skipping out of his presence, coming to his friends outside and saying, "What do you think happened to me?" And his friends all rejoicing with him because he'd been forgiven such a huge indebtedness. But then this man found one of his own servants who owed him 100 denarii, the equivalent of $20. And he took him by the neck and began to choke him when he wouldn't pay. And the man pleaded for mercy, and he said, "No mercy." His friend said, "How can this be?" And they went to the king and reported it. Can you imagine? Someone has just been forgiven the equivalent of $10 million. Now, if you took quarters and put them in sacks of 60 pounds each, you'd have 8,600 sacks of quarters that you could stretch out at 3-foot intervals for 5 miles. That's the debt that was forgiven this man, who would not forgive his servant a debt of 80 quarters that could be put in a little paper sack. An enormous contrast. And you see why the king was angry. And he said, "What's wrong with this man? Been forgiven so much, doesn't remember, makes no connection at all in his own life." Jesus said, "Your judgment will be the same. A condemnation before the just judge who one day will rule against you, because he forgave you so much that you could not forgive. He will recall his forgiveness. And though you cry, 'Lord, Lord,' he'll say, 'I don't know you.'" This little story is a story about relationships. Your relationship with God, your relationship with your fellow man, and another relationship that we often overlook. It's the relationship of what happens between us and God on a very personal basis, and the way we treat other human beings in this world. The relationship between what happens here this morning at the service of penitence and what we do tomorrow and the next day out there on the streets and in the community. How often do we see that connection? Or do we have a private faith that is eager to receive the blessing of God but never sees any connection with responsibilities in this life and in this world? Forgiveness, a very basic ingredient to the survival of the human family. And I'd like to take a little closer look at it with you now. For forgiveness presumes, in the first place, guilt. We're not very interested in guilt in general. We try to excuse ourselves, find reasons for things, but just consider for a moment your own life, if you will, as I ponder mine. And I think in the first place of the indiscretions of youth, the things I did when I was a boy that I wish I could call back. We had a junior high teacher once. She was a wonderful girl, just out of college. I don't think she ever thought there could be such a class in the United States. We pulled everything we knew, and I was not the least in the class, to think up some new prank. And the poor girl finally lost her job, and of course, we lost several months of education. And I've often wondered what happened to her. And I'd like to tell her how sorry I am today, but there's nothing I can do to rectify what's been done. I think of the things I did to some of my neighbors, supposed pranks, very unkind. Things I should have done for people who were lonely, times I should have spoken of love and let it slide by, talent and gifts and opportunities that I didn't grasp, things that I'll have to give account for because they're a trust to me. I cannot shirk all these responsibilities and just push them aside as though they never existed, because they really did. And I need forgiveness from a lot of people, as well as forgiveness for things that I should have done and didn't do, and I did that I shouldn't have done. And I don't know about you, but this bothers me every once in a while, and I need to remind myself of the forgiving grace of God. But we're all guilty. You see, we don't have to be murderers and thieves and adulterers, but we all come short. When we look at others, we only see a reflection of ourselves to one degree or another. And so we begin forgiveness for accidents, carelessness, the things that we did unintentionally that have hurt someone. But after this presupposition, there are the conditions now of forgiveness. How do we find forgiveness? First, we admit it, and we are ready to say we have done these things, or left undone certain things. And then we cry for mercy. We go to the person whom we've offended. As Jesus said, we come to worship, we leave our gifts on the altar and go to make things right. We want no barriers between us and anyone. But then there's a third thing. We will not find forgiveness, says Jesus, unless we are forgiving. Unless others come to us and ask for forgiveness and find in us a warm heart that understands. We dare to pray in the Lord's Prayer, forgive us as we forgive. And if we do not forgive, we are saying we do not expect to be forgiven. And so we have these conditions of forgiveness that must be met. And these are universal and respected for their simple logic. William Shakespeare wrote in The Merchant of Venice, though justice be thy plea, consider this, that in the course of justice, none of us shall see salvation, We do pray for mercy, and that same prayer doth teach us to render the deeds of mercy. That's the only way human beings can live together, is if they exercise forgiveness and are willing to receive those who have offended them. Well, what is this forgiveness? Three aspects to forgiveness, I think. The first is that we recognize the facts. We do not push it under the rug. We do not pretend to be so magnanimous that we want to say, well, it doesn't really matter. It does matter. When there's been an offense, let the offense stand. Recognize it for what it is, the hurt, and all the loss that goes with it. In the second place, there will be emotions. You'll become angry, perhaps, or someone will be offended by you, and they will despise you for it. But if you're going to forgive, you have to admit the emotion, but then deliberately set it aside and say, I cannot relate on the basis of emotion. I must think this through. I must forgive. And setting aside the emotion, you must then be prepared to pay. For forgiveness always costs you. And we don't like that. We Americans want it back again. If someone injures us, we not only sue for what they have to pay to rectify the wrong, but they have to pay us also for all of the injury to our feelings and our loss of time. Somehow we've learned to put a dollar sign on everything. But even that doesn't really pay. We have to learn that if we're going to forgive, we are going to accept those who have offended us and be willing to endure the hurt. And if they can pay, so much the better. But if they cannot, what did the king do? He simply forgave them. Oh, you can patch things up. You can repair the car that's been totaled. My brother and I were wrestling around on the living room floor, and we broke one of my mother's best vases, most prized porcelain. You can glue it back together, but you can always see it, if not with a naked eye, with X-ray. It's never quite the same. And time is gone, and there's all kinds of pain connected with injury and hurt. And you have to be willing to pay this if you're going to be one who forgives. Even as God gave His only Son in order to forgive us. And so we learn that we cannot live together without forgiveness, because in the economy of God, the